Chapter 43. Decisions and Apparitions. The Aes Sedai appeared to know what Loyal meant, but she said nothing. Loyal peered at the floor, rubbing under his nose with a thick finger as if he was abashed by his outburst. No one wanted to speak.
Why?
Rand asked at last.
Why would we die? What are the ways?
Loyal glanced at Moraine. She turned away to take a chair in front of the fireplace. The little cat stretched, its claws scratching on the hearthstone, and languidly walked over to butt its head against her ankles. She rubbed behind its ears with one finger. The cat's purring was a strange counterpoint to the Aes Sedai's level voice.
It is your knowledge, Loyal. The ways are the only path to safety for us. The only path to forestalling the Dark One, if only for a time. But the telling is yours.
The Ogier did not appear comforted by her speech. He shifted awkwardly on his chair before beginning.
During the time of madness, while the world was still being broken, the earth was in upheaval, and humankind was being scattered like dust on the wind. We Ogier were scattered too, driven from the steading into the exile and the long wandering, when the longing was graven on our hearts.
He gave Moraine another sidelong look. His long eyebrows drew down into two points.
I will try to be brief, but this is not a thing that can be told too briefly. It is of the others I must speak now. Those few Ogier who held in their steading, while around them the world was tearing apart. And of the Aes Sedai.
He avoided looking at Moraine now.
The male Aes Sedai, who were dying even as they destroyed the world in their madness. It was to those Aes Sedai, those who had so far managed to avoid the madness, that the steading first made the offer of sanctuary. Many accepted, for in the steading they were protected from the taint of the Dark One that was killing their kind. But they were cut off from the true source. It was not just that they could not wield the One Power or touch the source. They could no longer even sense that the source existed. In the end, none could accept that isolation, and one by one they left the steading, hoping that by that time the taint was gone. It never was.
Some in Tar Valon, Moraine said quietly, claim that Ogier Sanctuary prolonged the breaking and made it worse. Others say that if all those men had been allowed to go mad at once, there would have been nothing left of the world. I am of the blue Aja, Loyal. Unlike the red Aja, we hold to the second view. Sanctuary helped to save what could be saved. Continue, please.
Loyal nodded gratefully. Relieved of a concern, Rand realized.
As I was saying,
the Ogier went on,
the Aes Sedai, the male Aes Sedai, left. But before they went, they gave a gift to the Ogier in thanks for our sanctuary. The ways. Enter a way gate, walk for a day, and you may depart through another way gate 100 miles from where you started. Or 500. Time and distance are strange in the ways. Different paths, different bridges, lead to different places, and how long it takes to get there depends on which path you take. It was a marvelous gift, made more so by the times, for the ways are not part of the world we see around us, nor perhaps of any world outside themselves. Not only did the Ogier so gifted not have to travel through the world, where even after the breaking men fought like animals to live, in order to reach another steading, but within the ways there was no breaking. The land between two steading might split open into deep canyons or rise in mountain ranges, but in the way, between them, there was no change. When the last Aes Sedai left the steading, they gave to the elders a key, a talisman that could be used for growing more. They are a living thing in some fashion, the ways and the waygates. I do not understand it. No Ogier ever has, and even the Aes Sedai have forgotten, I am told. Over the years the exile ended for us, as those Ogier who had been gifted by the Aes Sedai found a steading where Ogier had returned from the long wandering. They grew away to it. With the stonework we learned during the exile, we built cities for men, and planted the groves to comfort the Ogier who did the building, so the longing would not overcome them. To those groves, ways were grown. There was a grove and a waygate at Mothal de Daranel, but that city was razed during the Trolloc Wars, no stone left standing on another, and the grove was chopped down and burned by Trolloc fires.
He left no doubt which had been the greater crime. Waygates are all but impossible to destroy, Moraine said, and humankind not much less so. There are people at Faldara still, though not the great city the Ogier built, and the waygate yet stands. How did they make them? Egwene asked. Her puzzled look took in Moraine and Loyal both. The Aes Sedai, the men. If they couldn't use the one power in a steading, how could they make the ways? Or did they use the power at all? Their part of the true source was tainted, is tainted. I don't know much about what Aes Sedai can do yet. Maybe it's a silly question.
Loyal explained.
Each steading has a waygate on its border, but outside. Your question is not silly. You found the seed of why we do not dare travel the ways. No Ogier has used the ways in my lifetime and before. By edict of the elders, all the elders of all the steading, none may, human or Ogier. The ways were made by men wielding power fouled by the Dark One. About 1,000 years ago, during what you humans call the War of the 100 Years, the ways began to change. So slowly in the beginning that none really noticed, they grew dank and dim. Then darkness fell along the bridges. Some who went in were never seen again. Travelers spoke of being watched from the dark. The numbers who vanished grew, and some who came out had gone mad, raving about Machinshin, the Black Wind. Aes Sedai healers could aid some, but even with Aes Sedai help, they were never the same, and they never remembered anything of what had occurred. Yet it was as if the darkness had sunken into their bones. They never laughed again, and they feared the sound of wind.
For a moment there was silence, but for the cat purring beside Moraine's chair, and the snap and crackle of the fire, popping out sparks. Then Nynaeve burst out angrily. And you expect us to follow you into that? You must be mad! Which would you choose instead? Moraine asked quietly. The white cloaks within Camlann, or the Trollocs without? Remember that my presence in itself gives some protection from the Dark One's works. Nynaeve settled back with an exasperated sigh.
You still have not explained to me, Loyal said, why I should break the edict of the elders, and I have no desire to enter the ways. Muddy as they often are, the roads men make have served me well enough since I left Steading Shangtai.
Humankind and Ogier, everything that lives, we are at war with the Dark One, Moraine said. The greater part of the world does not even know it yet, and most of the few who do fight skirmishes and believe they are battles. While the world refuses to believe, the Dark One may be at the brink of victory. There is enough power in the eye of the world to undo his prison. If the Dark One has found some way to bend the eye of the world to his use. Rand wished the lamps in the room were lit. Evening was creeping over Camlann, and the fire in the fireplace did not give enough light. He wanted no shadows in the room. What can we do? Matt burst out. Why are we so important? Why do we have to go to the Blight? The Blight! Moraine did not raise her voice, but it filled the room, compelling. Her chair by the fire suddenly seemed like a throne. Suddenly, even more gaze would have paled in her presence.
One thing we can do. We can try. What seems like chance is often the pattern. Three threads have come together here, each giving a warning. The eye. It cannot be chance. It is the pattern. You three did not choose. You were chosen by the pattern. And you are here, where the danger is known. You can step aside and perhaps doom the world. Running, hiding, will not save you from the weaving of the pattern. Or you can try. You can go to the eye of the world, three Taviren, three center points of the web, placed where the danger lies. Let the pattern be woven around you there, and you may save the world from the shadow. The choice is yours. I cannot make you go.
I'll go, Rand said, trying to sound resolute.
However hard he sought the void, images kept flashing through his head. Tam and the farmhouse and the flock in the pasture. It had been a good life. He had never really wanted anything more. There was comfort, a small comfort, hearing Perrin and Matt add their agreement to his. They sounded as dry-mouthed as he.
I suppose there isn't any choice for Egwene or me either, Nynaeve said.
Moraine nodded.
You are part of the pattern too, both of you in some fashion. Perhaps not Taviren, perhaps, but strong even so. I have known it since Berlon, and no doubt by this time the Fades know it too, and Baalzamon. Yet you have as much choice as the young men. You could remain here, proceed to Tar Valon once the rest of us have gone.
Stay behind, Egwene exclaimed. Let the rest of you go off into danger while we hide under the covers? I won't do it.
She caught the Aes Sedai's eye and drew back a little, but not all of her defiance vanished.
I won't do it, she muttered stubbornly.
I suppose that means both of us will accompany you.
Nynaeve sounded resigned, but her eyes flashed when she added,
You still need my herbs, Aes Sedai, unless you've suddenly gained some ability I don't know about.
Her voice held a challenge Rand did not understand, but Moraine merely nodded and turned to the Ogier.
Well, Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Hallen.
Loyal opened his mouth twice, his tufted ears twitching, before he spoke.
Yes, well. The Green Man, the Eye of the World. They're mentioned in the books, of course, but I don't think any Ogier has actually seen them in, oh, quite a long time. I suppose... But must it be the ways?
Moraine nodded, and his long eyebrows sagged till the ends brushed his cheeks.
Very well, then. I suppose I must guide you. Elder Haman would say it's no less than I deserve for being so hasty all the time.
Our choices are made, then, Moraine said. And now that they are made, we must decide what to do about them and how.
Long into the night they planned. Moraine did most of it, with Loyal's advice concerning the ways, but she listened to questions and suggestions from everyone. Once dark fell, Lan joined them, adding his comments in that iron-cored drawl. Nynaeve made a list of what supplies they needed, dipping her pen in the inkwell with a steady hand despite the way she kept muttering under her breath. Rand wished he could be as matter-of-fact as the wisdom. He could not stop pacing up and down as if he had energy to burn or burst from it. He knew his decision was made, knew it was the only one he could make with the knowledge he had, but that did not make him like it. The Blight. Sheol Ghul was somewhere in the Blight, beyond the blasted lands. He could see the same worry in Matt's eyes, the same fear he knew was in his own. Matt sat with his hands clasped, knuckles white. If he let go, Rand thought, he would be clutching the dagger from Shadar Logoth instead. There was no worry on Perrin's face at all, but what was there was worse. A mask of weary resignation. Perrin looked as though he had fought something until he could fight it no longer, and was waiting for it to finish him. Yet sometimes, we do what we must, Rand, he said.
The Blight,
an instant, those yellow eyes lit with eagerness, flashing in the fixed tiredness of his face as if they had a life of their own, apart from the big blacksmith's apprentice.
"There's good hunting along the Blight," he whispered.
Then he shuddered, as if he had just heard what he had said, and once more his face was resigned. And Egwene. Rand drew her apart at one point, over by the fireplace, where those planning around the table could not hear.
"Egwene, I..."
Her eyes, like big dark pools drawing him in, made him stop and swallow.
"It's me the Dark One's after, Egwene. Me and Matt and Perrin. I don't care what Moraine Sedai says. In the morning you and Nynaeve could start for home or Tarvalin, or anywhere you want to go, and nobody will try to stop you. Not the Trollocs, not the Fades, not anybody. As long as you aren't with us. Go home, Egwene. Or go to Tarvalin. But go."
He waited for her to tell him she had as much right to go where she wanted as he did, that he had no right to tell her what to do. To his surprise, she smiled and touched his cheek.
"Thank you, Rand," she said softly.
He blinked and closed his mouth as she went on.
"You know I can't, though. Moraine said I told us what Min saw in Bearlon. You should have told me who Min was. I thought... Well, Min says I am part of this, too. And Nynaeve. Maybe I'm not Tavirin," she stumbled over the word, "but the pattern sends me to the eye of the world, too, it seems. Whatever involves you involves me. But Egwene, who is Elaine?"
For a minute he stared at her, then told the simple truth.
"She's the daughter heir to the throne of Andor."
Her eyes seemed to catch fire.
"If you can't be serious for more than a minute, Randolph Thor, I do not want to talk to you."
Incredulous, he watched her stiff back return to the table, where she leaned on her elbows next to Moraine to listen to what the warder was saying.
"I need to talk to Perrin," he thought. "He knows how to deal with women."
Master Gil entered several times, first to light the lamps, then to bring food with his own hands, and later to report on what was happening outside. White cloaks were watching the inn from down the street in both directions. There had been a riot at the gates to the inner city, with the Queen's guards arresting white cockades and red alike. Someone had tried to scratch the dragon's fang on the front door and been sent on his way by Lamgwyn's foot. If the innkeeper found it odd that Loyal was with them, he gave no sign of it. He answered the few questions Moraine put to him without trying to discover what they were planning, and each time he came, he knocked at the door and waited till Lan opened it for him, just as if it were not his inn and his library. On his last visit, Moraine gave him the sheet of parchment covered in Nynaeve's neat hand.
"It won't be easy this time of night," he said, shaking his head as he perused the list. "But I'll arrange it all."
Moraine added a small wash leather bag that clinked as she handed it to him by the drawstrings.
"Good. And see that we are awakened before daybreak. The watchers will be at their least alert then."
"We'll leave them watching an empty box, I said I," Master Gil grinned.
Rand was yawning by the time he shuffled out of the room with the rest in search of baths and beds. As he scrubbed himself with a coarse cloth in one hand and a big yellow cake of soap in the other, his eyes drifted to the stool beside Matt's tub. The golden-sheathed tip of the dagger from Shadar Logoth peeked from under the edge of Matt's neatly folded coat. Lan glanced at it from time to time, too. Rand wondered if it was really as safe to have around as Moraine claimed.
"Do you think my doll ever believe it?"
Matt laughed, scrubbing his back with a long-handled brush.
"Me, saving the world. My sisters won't know whether to laugh or cry."
He sounded like the old Matt. Rand wished he could forget the dagger. It was pitch black when he and Matt finally got up to their room under the eaves, the stars obscured by clouds. For the first time in a long while, Matt undressed before getting into bed, but he casually tucked the dagger under his pillow, too. Rand blew out the candle and crawled into his own bed. He could feel the wrongness from the other bed, not from Matt, but from beneath his pillow. He was still worrying about it when sleep came. From the first, he knew it was a dream, one of those dreams that was not entirely dream. He stood staring at the wooden door, its surface dark and cracked and rough with splinters. The air was cold and dank, thick with the smell of decay. In the distance, water dripped, The splash's hollow echoes down stone corridors. Deny it. Deny him, and his power fails. He closed his eyes and concentrated on the queen's blessing, on his bed, on himself asleep in his bed. When he opened his eyes, the door was still there. The echoing splashes came on his heartbeat, as if his pulse counted time for them. He sought the flame in the void, as Tam had taught him, and found inner calm. But nothing outside of him changed. Slowly he opened the door and went in. Everything was as he remembered it in the room that seemed burned out of the living rock. Tall arched windows led onto an unrailed balcony, and beyond it the layered clouds streamed like a river in flood. The black metal lamps, their flames too bright to look at, gleamed, black, yet somehow as bright as silver. The fire roared but gave no heat in the fearsome fireplace, each stone still vaguely like a face in torment. All was the same, but one thing was different. On the polished tabletop stood three small figures, the rough, featureless shapes of men, as if the sculptor had been hasty with his clay. Beside one stood a wolf, its clear detail emphasized by the crudeness of the man-shape, and another clutched a tiny dagger, a point of red on the hilt glittering in the light. The last held a sword. The hair stirring on the back of his neck, he moved close enough to see the hair in an exquisite detail on that small blade. His head jerked up in panic, and he stared directly into the lone mirror. His reflection was still a blur, but not so misty as before. He could almost make out his own features. If he imagined he was squinting, he could nearly tell who it was. "You've hidden from me too long," he whirled from the table, breath rasping his throat. A moment before he had been alone, but now Baalzamon stood before the windows. When he spoke, caverns of flame replaced his eyes and mouth. "Too long, but not much longer."
"I deny you," Rand said hoarsely. "I deny that you hold any power over me. I deny that you are."
Baalzamon laughed, a rich sound rolling from fire.
"Do you think it is that easy? But then you always did. Each time we have stood like this, you have thought you could defy me."
"What do you mean, each time? I deny you."
"You always do, in the beginning.
This contest between us has taken place countless times before. Each time your face is different, and your name, but each time it is you."
"I deny you."
It was a desperate whisper.
"Each time you throw your puny strength against me, and each time, in the end, you know which of us is the master. Age after age you kneel to me, or die wishing you still had strength to kneel. Poor fool. You can never win against me."
"Liar," he shouted.
"Father of lies. Father of fools, if you can't do better than that. Men found you in the last age, in the age of legends, and bound you back where you belong."
Baalzamon laughed again, peal after mocking peal, until Rand wanted to cover his ears to shut it out. He forced his hands to stay at his sides. Void or no, they were trembling when the laughter finally stopped.
"You worm. You know nothing at all. As ignorant as a beetle under a rock, and as easily crushed. This struggle has gone on since the moment of creation. Always men think it a new war, but it is just the same war discovered anew. Only now change blows in the winds of time. Change. This time there will be no drifting back. Those proud Aes Sedai who think to stand you up against me, I will dress them in chains and send them running naked to do my bidding, or stuff their souls into the pit of doom to scream for eternity. All but those who already serve me. They will stand but a step beneath me. You can choose to stand with them, with the world groveling at your feet. I offer it one more time, one last time. You can stand above them, above every power and dominion but mine. There have been times when you made that choice, times when you lived long enough to know your power.
Rand grabbed hold to what he could deny.
No Aes Sedai serve you. Another lie.
Is that what they told you? 2,000 years ago, I took my Trollocs across the world. And even among Aes Sedai, I found those who knew despair, who knew the world could not stand before Shaitan. For 2,000 years, the Black Adja has dwelt among the others, unseen in the shadows. Perhaps even those who claimed to help you.
Rand shook his head, trying to shake away the doubts that came welling up in him. All the doubts he had had about Moraine, about what the Aes Sedai wanted with him, about what she planned for him.
What do you want from me? He cried. Deny him. Light, help me deny him.
Kneel!
Balsman pointed to the floor at his feet.
Kneel and acknowledge me your master. In the end, you will. You will be my creature, or you will die.
The last word echoed through the room, reverberating back on itself, doubling and redoubling, till Rand threw up his arms as if to shield his head from a blow. Staggering back until he thumped into the table, he shouted, trying to drown the sound in his ears.
No!
As he cried out, he spun, sweeping the figures to the floor. Something stabbed his hand, but he ignored it, stomping the clay to shapeless smears underfoot. But when his shout failed, the echo was still there and growing stronger. Die, 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 die. The sound pulled on him like a whirlpool, drawing him in, ripping the void in his mind to shreds. The light dimmed, and his vision narrowed down to a tunnel with Baalzamon standing tall in the last spot of brightness at the end, dwindling until it was the size of his hand, a fingernail, nothing. Around and around the echo whirled him, down into blackness and death. The thump as he hit the floor woke him, still struggling to swim up out of that darkness. The room was dark, but not so dark as that. Frantically, he tried to center on the flame, to shovel fear into it, but the calm of the void eluded him. Tremors ran down his arms and legs, but he held the image of the single flame until the blood stopped pounding in his ears. Matt was tossing and twisting on his bed, groaning in his sleep.
Deny you, deny you, deny you.
It faded off into unintelligible moans. Rand reached out to shake him awake, and at first touch, Matt sat up with a strangled grunt. For a minute, Matt stared around wildly, then drew a long, shuddering breath and dropped his head into his hands. Abruptly, he twisted around, digging under his pillow, then sank back, clutching the ruby-hilted dagger in both hands on his chest. He turned his head to look at Rand, his face hidden in shadow.
He's back, Rand.
I know. Matt nodded.
There were these three figures.
I saw them too.
He knows who I am, Rand. I picked up the one with the dagger and he said, "So that's who you are." And when I looked again, the figure had my face. My face, Rand. It looked like flesh. It felt like flesh. Light, help me, I could feel my own hand gripping me, like I was the figure.
Rand was silent for a moment.
You have to keep denying him, Matt. I did, and he laughed. He kept talking about some eternal war, and saying we'd met like that 1,000 times before, and... Light, Rand, the Dark One knows me.
He said the same thing to me. I don't think he does, he added slowly. I don't think he knows which of us...
Which of us what?
As he levered himself up, pain stabbed his hand. Making his way to the table, he managed to get the candle lit after 3 tries, then spread his hand open in the light. Driven into his palm was a thick splinter of dark wood, smooth and polished on one side. He stared at it, not breathing. Abruptly, he was panting, plucking at the splinter, fumbling with haste.
What's the matter? Matt asked.
Nothing. Finally, he had it, and a sharp yank pulled it free. With a grunt of disgust, he dropped it, but the grunt froze in his throat. As soon as the splinter left his fingers, it vanished. The wound was still there in his hand, though, bleeding. There was water in the stoneware pitcher. He filled the basin, his hands shaking so that he splashed water onto the table. Hurriedly he washed his hands, kneading his palm till his thumb brought out more blood, then washed them again. The thought of the smallest sliver remaining in his flesh terrified him.
Light, Matt said. He made me feel dirty too.
But he still lay where he was, holding the dagger in both hands.
Yes, Rand said. Dirty.
He fumbled a towel from the stack beside the basin. There was a knock at the door, and he jumped. It came again.
Yes, he said.
Moraine put her head into the room.
You are awake already. Good. Dress quickly and come down. We must be away before first light.
Now?
Matt groaned.
We haven't had an hour's sleep yet.
An hour, she said. You have had four. Now hurry. We do not have much time. Rand shared a confused look with Matt. He could remember every second of the dream clearly. It had begun as soon as he closed his eyes and lasted only minutes. Something in that exchange must have communicated itself to Moraine. She gave them a penetrating look and came all the way in.
What has happened? The dreams?
He knows who I am, Matt said. The Dark One knows my face.
Rand held up his hand wordlessly, palm toward her. Even in the shadowed light from the one candle, the blood was plain. The Aes Sedai stepped forward and grasped his upheld hand, her thumb across his palm covering the wound. Cold pierced him to the bone, so chill that his fingers cramped, and he had to fight to keep them open. When she took her fingers away, the chill went too. He turned his hand then, stunned, scrubbed the thin smear of blood away. The wound was gone. Slowly he raised his eyes to meet those of the Aes Sedai.
Hurry, she said softly. Time grows very short.
He knew she was not speaking of the time for their leaving anymore.